You're listening to Good Sentences, the podcast that's guaranteed to tickle your literary ear holes and make you wish you'd listened to dear old mom when she said to put down those lawn darts and learn how to read. And now, here are your hosts, neither of whom listened to dear old mom. This is Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Yeah, speaking of guests, we have a special one.
No, man, you guys are in for such a treat.
And I'm going to let Scott do the introduction here before we bring her on. Scott, well, I said I was going to let you introduce it, and then I started introducing it. Off to you, Scott.
It's in your blood. You can't stop. Our guest tonight is a woman named Sherry Pratt. She is a personal friend of mine. Her and I and a group of other talented writers used to meet every Tuesday night at our local library for the Baldwinsville Open Writers Group. And I had actually met her prior to that when I attended a writers group in a neighboring town, Liverpool, New York, and she was there. And then one day she started showing up at the one in Beeville, and I figured I've either died and gone to heaven or Sherry has come to my group. And it turned out to be the second of these two things.
Well, certainly wouldn't be the other one. No, if you know what no, I mean.
Yes, yes, indeed. But anyway, Sherry's one of the most gifted writers I've ever known. She is also comfortably in her 90s now, so she's seen a bit of life and brings all of that experience into her writing and into her verbal storytelling as well, because you can't be around her and not be entertained. She's just done so much and seen so much, and I am very excited to have Sherry Pratt with us tonight.
Sherry, welcome to the show.
And there she is.
There she is. I can see her and hear her. Technology, we've defeated it again. It's always a good sign when everything works right off the bat. Well, thank you so much, Sherry. We really appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Well, you may be very disappointed. I'm afraid. There's no way of living up to Scott's story or about meeting me or any things about me, but I thank him kindly anyway.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Well, the good news is nobody believes anything Scott says.
That's right.
You're good. Go ahead, Scott. Lead us off.
There's so much I want to talk to you about, because first of all, I haven't seen you in forever and I've missed you terribly, but let's talk about there's a comment on the screen right now from a good friend of ours who wants to just hug you already, Sherry, and all she's doing is seeing you.
We're all in love, and it's only just begun. 6 minutes in, you've entranced us all, Sherry.
Let's talk about storytelling, Sherry. What made you start writing down stories?
Well, I always liked to write. I used to write essays for some of my classmates in school who weren't able to do it, and told them to always recopy, because do not hand this paper in. And I think I was brought up in a family that read a lot. My parents read to me. My father read to me. My mother told me stories about her childhood, being one of nine Irish American children and in a small coal mining town in Pennsylvania. And I was just fascinated. She would iron and I would sit and listen to her. And the time just went by so quickly. And of course, I started reading very early because my mother took us to, well, she took me to a cemetery near the house where we were living in the country, and we used to picnic there. And I was probably about three, I think, and she would have me feel the letters on the tombstones and so that I wouldn't be frightened of them. And I learned my letters that way.
Wow.
And eventually I began to read myself. And in our family, I think the major books that we owned would have been Kipling, because my father was English, and all of Mark Twain, because they were sold. I think every month they would bring a book to your house and you would pay for it. And I read all of Mark Twain, and Charles Dickens was the other one that was sold that way. And they were all bound alike. And that's what I had to read. And so I did. And then I discovered the public library quite early and thought I would just read everything in the library before I had grown up, not realizing how many books there were or how difficult they might be for me. And that was in Albany, and I was probably 7. I could walk to the library by myself, and they write my name. They gave me a card, and we were off to the races. I must have gone back 4 days out of a week just to exchange the book that they let me have and get another one. So I think that makes a good background for somebody who's going to be a storyteller. And that's what I really, I don't know. I remember when I married very young, and at 18, my husband had just come home from the war. He had been a ski trooper in Italy, and with the 86th Mountain. And he was very interested in books, too. As a matter of fact, I think I fell in love with him because he was so bright and so interesting. Even in school, when he was dating someone else. But we used to argue about all sorts of things, political and otherwise, and books we'd read and what they meant. And he came home, and we'd been writing for 3 years. He wrote when my father died, said he was so sorry that my father had died, and I answered, and he sent another letter, and I answered, and it went on from there. So when he started college, we were married, and he went to Syracuse University, and they offered, if you worked for anywhere in the university, they offered 18 free credit hours, which intrigued me greatly. So I went to work at the university in the hospital, and they gave me my 18 hours a semester, was what it was. Well, there are 3 semesters in the year, the spring, the summer, and the fall. So I took classes at random, things I liked, history, especially I loved history and philosophy and anything but math or science that would require real thinking or intelligence. And then I started to write, and my first efforts were pretty sad, I must admit. And it was all in longhand on yellow legal pads, because we had lots of yellow legal pads in our home. And some of my stories were about that time. Some of my stories were simply made up because I thought of an interesting situation, and I never would start to write until I knew where I was going with it. I had to have a beginning and an end. I could fill in the middle to get to the end, but I didn't know how it was going to end. And then I started to take a writing class at Syracuse, And I was hooked. It really, I mean, there's no other word to say for it. I would sometimes call into the hospital and say, I have a very sore throat. I'm not coming in today. And curl up in bed while my husband was at work or at school and write. And I find now that if I ever come across any of those early pages, I can't read them anymore because of the pencil I was using on the yellow paper eventually has faded over the years so that it's wow. not possible to tell what it is. But then I graduated to a typewriter and then the computer, and it's difficult to say. That's what made me begin to write. What kept me going, I think, was that I found groups that were struck by the same disease. And we reinforced each other because I discovered very early that what every writer needs is someone to listen to it, analyze it, and tell you what's wrong. And they might tell you what's right, too. Mainly, I was interested in what's wrong. And right. I have found group writing. We don't write at the groups. We simply bring in what we've written and read it. And then everybody goes through and tears it apart or clap you on the back, because like most writers, I put down words and I instantly think, yes, this is wonderful. And I read it 2 weeks later and it's not wonderful. So you need help. I don't think you can really judge your own work. Yes. Perhaps yeah. people who are better at it and more skilled can, but I am neither that skilled or that good to be able to judge what I put on paper, whether it's really has going to have any meaning for someone else.
Well, you've had all of these decades of writing experience. If you could go back and tell that younger writer, Sherry, anything, what do you think you would tell her?
First of all, find very good authors and read them. Mm-hmm. Not because you're necessarily going to copy their style or their interests, because you'll have your own interests, and eventually you'll probably develop some sort of a style anyway. I can't be sure about that. But the more reading you do of well-written books, the more you're going to analyze them, even though you don't realize that you're analyzing. What did she do? She's telling me that because something's going to happen about that, and the information has to be prior to the event. And I learned so much by reading. I don't know how anyone just starts off. I mean, I could write a letter. I did. I wrote a lot of letters. I think one a day for a three-year period of time to the man who became my husband. And I tried to make them interesting, not necessarily truthful, but interesting. And he wrote back. And yet, strangely enough, when he came home and we became better acquainted than on paper, let me put it that way. He would tell me about some of the funny things that happened during his 3 years in the Army. I know he won a bronze medal for scaling River Ridge and taking it away from the Germans, which evidently was an extremely bloody battle. But he never told me that. All he told me was the difficulty in climbing this almost impossible side of a mountain that the Germans really weren't protecting because they didn't think that it was possible for anybody to come up that way. And he never talked of the bad things. And I found out only, well, really, I'd say this year, my daughter brought me a number of books on the Italian War and the Alp Mountains, is where he fought. And I realized, I think for the first time, why he hadn't said anything. I'm sure he talked to other soldiers who came home about it, but he never spoke to me about it, and I know he never spoke to his family about it. And I have stayed away from subjects that I wasn't interested in. If I was interested, and if a young writer is interested in a particular period of time, get all the books you can on it and be sure that what you're saying fits the actual facts as much as you can. And don't be afraid of writing something that's unpleasant. Don't be afraid that all of your characters have to be good or that you necessarily have to have bad character. I think the people you write about are going to be shades of gray for the most part. And I think that describing the time and knowing what songs were sung, how the exterior, how it looked, how the houses looked, if there are none, how the fields and the meadows looked, describing a flower, brings you very acutely into the situation. And try and, because this was one of my problems, when you're writing as you're thinking, and what you must put yourself into, and I found this, the best thing for me was to put myself into the period of time and the type of person that I was writing about and feel that I was there. And it was necessary to speak in the language, at least not use words that weren't in use then. It's little things like that are, but most of all, you have to put your heart into it. You have to feel when you're writing that this is something I have to get down on paper and feel that you're a part of it. You know your people, and you know what they're going to, how they're going to react, how they're going to feel, and you really have to put yourself into several different characters. I've done things that are modern, relatively modern. I mean, what are 20 years or so in that time of things? And I've done things that go back to the Middle Ages, and I've done things, and I wrote one long story about Braddock's retreat, which was probably the first long piece that I ever attempted and finished. I have a number of unfinished stories at this point, which are halfway through, and there they sit. But And the reason I wrote about Braddock's retreat was because we had driven through Pennsylvania and saw signs stating that this was the path he took. He was a British general who was before the Revolutionary War, who was, for those who don't know, attempting to throw the French off the main portions of the important waterways and their Indian allies. And I don't know whether I'm still with you or not.
You're with us.
You absolutely are.
Craig just put the page with your book on it up so people could see it.
And it interested both my husband and I so much. He said, when I retire, I'll do the research for you and you could do the writing. Well, he died, which was not at all the way to leave a manuscript. That wasn't even begun. So I ended up doing a year of research on that before I even began typing. And the most of my other work are shorter, much shorter stories. I've done a few poems, but my family says, don't bother with poetry, Mother. You're not a poet.
Well, I would never say anything about your family, Sherry, but I strongly disagree with that statement because I've heard some of your poetry and it's given me goosebumps. So, well, sorry, can't agree with your family on that one.
Bless your heart. Well, you—that's about all. You can ask me anything, and I may or may not be able to answer it. But that's about as much as I have to say about what I have done.
That was great. Well, thank you. I put Sherry's book up on the screen. Please, everybody, go get. I have purchased this, and I hope everybody else will as well. It's well worth having. Great stuff.
Oh, yeah, you will definitely not regret that. Well,
at least you can see me how as I looked when I was 18 and my husband was madly in love with me. Because that's my picture.
Yes, it is.
Lovely then, lovely now.
All right, let's go through some of our listeners' questions here that have been stacking up. Some folks were asking, you had mentioned that you had done the writing on the legal pads and that a lot of it had faded, but they wanted to know if you still had any of those in your possession.
I have lots of blank legal pads, but the writing is pretty much gone. I think there's maybe one poem that's still visible, but most of it just is. But I do have copies of the stories I've written. I've kept them on paper because I don't trust electronics.
Yeah.
For a good reason.
I'm kind of a hybrid of that because I do all my work electronically, but then when I edit, I always print it out and edit on paper. So I don't know. I'm stuck between two worlds, I guess.
Every time I finish a story, I have it tattooed on my back.
Unfortunately, he's written enough now that his black bag is just a single black square.
Oh, dear.
Actually, Craig, I was going to have you ask some of those questions that you ask all our writer guests that I love so much.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. Do you try when you're... I guess I should phrase the question first by saying, do you write for yourself or do you write with a reader in mind?
No, I write for myself. And many of the things I write probably are not going to interest too many people because I write from, well, I write from memory. I write from the fact that I've thought of or seen a little girl who just gives me the idea for a story about her, or a period of time that I'm interested in and wonder what you're going to, what could I do with that? No, I write for myself. Even the tales about myself are really written for myself, because learning to, trying to bake bread, for instance, is one, and the other was flying with my husband and the children in his little airplane, and finding that the runway we were leaving on top of a high hill was so short that he had to do a stop and go. He couldn't really land on it. And we were going to see a museum at that point, and he thought we could walk to it from that hillside, that hilltop airport strip, which was simply two lines going north, south, and east, and west, and a windsock. And
well, at least I had a windsock.
No point in telling you what happened, because it wasn't great. but I'm still here, so obviously we came out unscathed, let me put it that way.
Well, when you are creating a new story and you're populating that story with characters, do you base those characters on real people, or do you make them up, or is it sort of a hybrid between the two?
I'd say it's a hybrid between the two. One of my stories is based on a dream I had, and none of the people existed. I have several stories that are based on real people that I knew, and I simply changed the names to not embarrass anybody.
To protect the guilty?
And yes, and since they took place when I was 21, I think, or 20, those people are long since gone anyway, and nobody's going to care a bit about finding themselves suddenly staring out of a page at them. Most of my stories are imaginary. Yeah. The people may be based on someone I met at one time or saw, and you can just imagine from the appearance, perhaps the situations they might find themselves in, or they fit perfectly into the situation you have in mind. But I wouldn't say that anybody ever need be embarrassed, not even the poor general who died in his event, to worry. I just don't worry about that. And
right.
All I can say is that if I had never been a reader, I would never have been a writer.
Yeah. I think that's a very common thread. Scott and I have talked about this, where, you know, those of us who have started reading young, something happened along the way, where there was an individual book that turned us on to writing or whatnot. In fact, one of the questions I often ask writers is, what was the first book you read that you really understood and realized that the written word had real power? And I was going to ask you that question. Is there a single book in your mind that stands out where you read and you're like, this can change lives?
Changing lives and power are two different things in a way. As far as power going, and it changed lives at the time, I think it was based on partially on real events and real people, was The Lost Queen of Egypt. And I probably was 10 or 11 when I read that. And it was one of the first books I owned. Mm. My My father bought it for me. And I absolutely adore Alice Peters and the books that she wrote under her actual name, which is, oh dear, now my memory is leaving me. Isn't that dreadful?
Alice Peters was a pseudonym? I did not know that.
It was yes, she wrote the Caldwell series, but she mm-hmm. wrote very serious literature. Edith Parker.
Yep, I just had it pop up on my other screen as you remembered it. Yep, Edith Mary
Parker. And she wrote The Heaven Tree, which was a trilogy, which intrigued me so much that I had to buy three copies through the used market. And I have lent two of them out to people who have lent them to people, and I probably will never see them again.
Oh, that's how it goes.
I think I've owned at least four copies of all my favorite books for just that reason. You got to read this. Yeah, okay, you'll never see it again.
No. No, I have a very good friend of mine died about 15 years ago. And we used to exchange books all the time. And her daughter, after several weeks had passed and they were cleaning out the house, came back with a big brown bag filled with books. And she said, "These must be yours because your name is on the bag." And none of them were mine. So I can only presume they were meant for me. And I dutifully sat back and read them all. They're probably not my shelves.
You talk a lot about writing about historical things. Do you think there are special ethics involved when dealing with historical figures? Like, I guess you kind of touched on this, the responsibility to research properly and to learn as much as you can about the time and the people about what you're writing. Do you think that's a special responsibility of a writer?
I think that it's impossible to really do justice to yourself unless you know all about them, the good, the bad, and the indifferent, and the period of time they lived in, and even the problems they faced, which made them do certain things or act in certain ways. Because I've discovered only over 93 years that time makes a great deal of difference. My life is entirely different from my mother's. And as a child, I expected I would do exactly the same thing she did when I grew up. Mm-hmm. Go riding and play golf and go dancing on Saturday nights and have tea with people in the afternoon. And my life was nothing like that. Mm. And it's just because times change. And the longer you're talking about that something happened, the less you understand about it, and it's really important to understand in order to make a character real.
Yeah, when I talk about writing historical things, and I have one historical book out, and I'd like to do more of them, but I always, as I'm doing the research, I try very hard to look at the characters and the events that I'm writing about through historical eyes and not through my modern eyes. Because as you say, I don't think there's a way that you can really understand what's going on. Like they make different decisions. They say things and do things that to us don't make any sense, but we weren't there.
Right.
You know,
but we weren't there.
Right.
And it's so easy. I don't think young people have a real sense of history that goes back as far as it should. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many other things that are so important at this point in schools that sure. they're teaching social studies, and it's really a history of our time, more or less, rather than history. And I think countries and in people writing history, you're always going to have an opinion about it. I mean, you can't help it. And therefore, I've never attempted to write a book about someone that in history that I might feel judgmental about without mm-hmm. understanding what it was they faced or how they were brought up or what the time was like and other people were doing. So, but I love historical fiction. I love historical fiction.
I was honored to be in a group with you when you read your long story over a period of several weeks. Oh. And I can testify to all the things you say that you hold as important when telling a story like that. You hit most of them in that story. I remember being very taken by the phrases used by the characters that, you know, that I recognized as being things that had been said, but probably not since the day you're capturing in the story. In many cases, just those more, you know, archaic terms that you found and that you used, and they work so wonderfully to capture that moment, you know.
Well, you do me more justice than I deserve, because when I wrote that, first of all, I thought I worked at school at that time, and I had a principal who was a marvelous man, just a marvelous man. And his name was Bob Carboni. And he said to me, "It's a pity there aren't more books that will interest boys, because there's so many books for girls out there." And years later, I thought, I'll write a book. And when I started on this Braddock's Retreat, I couldn't decide how to go with it. And I thought, I'll write a book that a boy would be interested in. And it isn't a child's book, really. But that was the way I started with the character and the event, and I had to fill all the rest in with research.
One of our users, a good friend, Mike Henry, who comes just about every week for some reason to hang out with us, wants to know if there's a time in history you're more interested in than others.
I think the medieval years. Mm. I really do, because there was such a change, and people had such a hard time trying to understand anything that they really couldn't see, and so people read, and you had nobles on one hand in every country, and then you had the rest of the people who were simply there to do the work, and the nobles were there to do the fighting. And I think it interests me because it always amazes me that people's characters don't seem to change over time. There are people who fall in love, who want to do their best, who love their children. We have so much in common with the past and the people who lived right. it, and we really don't understand that.
Absolutely. I want to interject right here and just say, if you haven't yet purchased Sherry's book, please do so. Time Remembered, The Past Presented to the Future by S.J. Pratt. It's available on Kindle and paperback. Pick it up. You will not be disappointed. I have a few more minutes here. Do you have another question for our guest, Scott?
Question. I thought of so many nice things to say about her that I probably didn't spend as much time thinking up questions I should.
Here's one, maybe. Who's the most interesting person you've met in your long life?
Oh, goodness. I've met a lot of interesting people. Because my father was a Shell Oil man, and he knew and had dealt with people like Tom Mix, like Admiral Byrd, because just through business reasons, they and publicity probably. Mm-hmm. But I don't know who I would say. Of course, I thought my husband was very, very interesting.
Right.
and I felt such a loss when he died because we had such plans just to enjoy life, and we did so much together. But I've met a number of really interesting people, and some of them were not necessarily important to the world. But they were important to me when I came to know them. And I have had 1, 2, 3, 4 absolutely marvelous friends who have all gone at this point, except for one. And I wouldn't want to say that I ever met him, but I think that probably Franklin Roosevelt, the president, would have been a most interesting person if I were going to pick one that I could meet and talk to and listen to.
Right. It's interesting you talk about, you know, the friends and people that you've known that were interesting, even if just, you know, to you, not to the world at large. But one thing that I found in my writing as I'm developing characters is that sometimes the most interesting people are the more common people, because I've learned that everyone has a story. They may not be famous, but everybody has a story. And it's the job of a writer, and well, the pleasure and the privilege of a writer, to mine down and find those commonplace stories. There's a writer who specializes in short story writer, and for like one of my favorite writers, and he wrote The Cathedral, Raymond Carver. That's right, Raymond Carver. He was always really, really good at that. He wrote a lot of short stories, and most of his are about common, everyday things, but the way he writes about them is absolutely enthralling. So he's one of my writing heroes.
I have a question to ask. Scott, when are you going to publish for poetry?
Ah, that is a very salient question, because Craig and I have been talking about that pretty frequently. I think we'll see a collection come out at some point this year.
I hope so. I really do. You know, I know that you do, and I miss our meetings so much. But if the virus continues long enough, I'm not going to be here to go. So,
well, hopefully we'll be back together soon.
I want to say thank you to Sherry for joining us. This has been absolutely fantastic. Again, book Time Remembered, The Past Presented to the Future by S.J. Pratt. Please go pick it up. Anything to send us off with, Scott?
Sherry, I just want to thank you for agreeing to do this and for brightening up all of our evenings.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon.
Well, thank you. And I'm amazed you even thought of me, as a matter of fact.
You were the first person I thought of.
Bless your heart.